long story short, thought actually it's quite difficult to get our neighbours and friends to Beast and Free for events.
It was far enough away.
For yeah, that. I think so. And culturally a little bit different in terms of... So Beast and Free is great church, I think, but very sort of university church, lots of students.
Yeah.
So we were just thinking, could we do something different for that particular group of people?
Yeah.
So that was the initial vision, was to do something in the Rylands for the Rylands where we could put church on, really.
Okay. Hello and welcome to Independence, the FIAC podcast for church leaders. Very glad you can join us today in our little series to think about church planting. And I'm joined by Graham Bynum, who's our Associate National Director. And church planting is one of your responsibilities. Well, no, you're not actually the church planter, but helping church planters. Isn't that right, Graham?
No, I think I've done my time on planting churches. I try and help others now. We have a team offering coaching, training cohort. We run a conference and so on. Go on to the FIAC site and look up planting and you'll see more of what we do there.
And Steve Baraniak. Hello, Steve, from Rylands Community Church. I'm in the presence of two experienced church planters. That's right, isn't it? You can say that now. How long have you been at Rylands?
I'll take that. About 12 years.
Okay.
So we were 12 in September. So.
Well, we're looking forward to hearing how that story began in just a moment. Graham, just tell us, why are we doing this little series?
Yeah, we want to fly a flag for planting.
Yeah. There's planting going on, right?
Oh, there's lots of planting happening with the FIAC. There has been for a long time. At the moment, something like a new church plant a month is starting within the FIAC, which is wonderful. And we're wanting to fly a flag for planting, explore stories of planting, stimulate people to think up whether they might plant, and both encourage us in that and help us and support planters.
I think FIAC was planting churches before it was trendy. Weren't they? FIAC churches?
Well, I mean, it's funny, isn't it? In one sense, every church is a church plant.
That's true, yes.
Okay, so everyone's been planting.
Fair enough.
In more recent years, yes, I think FIAC was still planting, prior to the more recent sort of uplift and trend of
that. And we're looking at different kinds of church plants. Broadly, what are those?
Yeah, we divide it into three very broad brush categories. Mother-daughter, people go down the road, as it were, from a larger church usually. A parachute plant, where we start in a brand new area and people have to move into that area, or a replant or revitalization. They're not always distinct categories, but those are the three broad brush pictures we're looking at.
And Steve, which of those do you identify as? Which of those three on the spectrum?
Yeah, we're, classically a mother-daughter.
Okay.
So we were part of a bigger church in Beeston.
Right.
Wanted to plant into a particular area.
So Beeston, which I think probably was originally a church plant. Well, it must have been a church plant itself at some point. But just give us a little idea of the geography. So we're in the Nottingham area.
Yeah.
I know that broadly.
Yeah.
So fill us in a bit more about Beeston and Rylands, where you are. Just tell us a little bit more about the area.
So Beeston is sort of southwest of the city, very close to the university town, has been for a long time. And Beeston Rylands is a part of Beeston. So if you live in the Rylands, you would talk about being a Rylander.
Right.
You're still really part of Beeston.
Yeah.
So it's a sort of a geographically, there's the railway line that runs to Nottingham, and there's the River Trent and within that is Beeston Rylands.
Okay.
So it's kind of a fixed
area. So you're on the same
area.
Side of the river?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Anywhere near the tram?
15-minute walk.
I have this theory that most decent cities have trams, so you can claim it.
Yeah, I'll take it.
Okay.
Yeah. We're close to the train station.
And tell us what sort of place, just give us a feel for the place, new houses, old houses, quaint village, housing, what sort of place? Help us picture it.
Historically, so Boots is a massive employer,
and there
was Plessy, which was a massive employer, and Rylands was built to provide housing, I think, for those two massive employers.
Okay.
So, historically, I'd say it's probably been the cheaper end of Beeston, like cheaper houses, smaller houses. Yeah. It's changed actually in the last few years, in that since the tram, house prices in Beeston have gone up.
Right.
Which has driven the houses prices up in Beeston Rylands as well. So it's changing slightly, but I still think overwhelmingly during the day, there are no cars parked. Everyone's out. And then in the evening, you've got a lot of cars, but also quite a lot of white vans. So there's a lot of people who live there would have the significant numbers of their own business, plumbers, electricians, painter, decorators, that kind of thing.
Great.
So that would be, a massive demographic. But increasingly, I think people that want to live in Beeston but can't afford it are sort of getting their first houses. And
Beeston itself is fairly self-contained, isn't it? I mean, it's got a high street, it's got restaurants, it's got supermarkets, all the rest of it, schools.
That's right.
And what sort of size are we talking about, population size? You got any idea?
It's about, I think the last census was about 5,000 souls.
Okay.
We've just had a load more houses built on the Plessy site, which is sort of closed. And then the Boots have sold off a load of brownfield sites. Yeah, so it's growing.
Still building going on.
Loads of building going on.
Okay.
So, I don't know how many exactly, but it feels significant.
Okay. So 5,000 and growing.
Yeah.
And tell us what sort of, when did this plant begin? When did all the kind of the work for it take place?
So we're 12 years old. So it was around sort of 2013 that we started. But it had been... Beeston Free Church have been thinking about it for a couple of years before, at least a couple of years before we started.
And why? What was the story? Why a plant?
Well, because we're really trendy and ahead of the game. I mean, I always think FIC trendy go together.
Natural bedfellows. Oh,
that's right.
Yes.
Yeah.
Said no one ever. Okay.
Beeston Free has been. Since sort of the early noughties, had significant growth, which was really exciting as a church. And like a lot of churches, the response to that was to make the place bigger. And they sort of got to a point where we couldn't do that anymore on the site. So that became harder to do. Alongside that, the people who lived in the Rylands, there are about 30 or so church members of Beeston that live there. And long story short, thought actually... it's quite difficult to get our neighbours and friends to Beeston Free for events.
It was far enough away for that.
Yeah, I think so. And culturally a little bit different in terms of, so Beeston Free is great church, I think, but very sort of university church, lots of students.
Yeah.
So we were just thinking, could we do something different for that particular group of people? So that was the initial vision, was to do something in the Rylands for the Rylands where we could put church on, really.
Okay. Is that fairly common, Graham, in terms of a reason for a mother-daughter plant taking place?
Yes. I think you can talk in terms of push and pull factors.
Yeah.
And so for many churches that end up planting, there is a push factor. They're full and they're wondering what to do about that. I mean, just purely by itself, making space isn't the best reason to plant a church, but it's, you know, in many instances, it's what's prompted the thought in the first instance. That's okay. But then, of course, you want there to be a pull factor. You want to say, we want a church here for, in this case, you know, for that community and so on. And very often with a church in a city like Beeston, and churches I've planted from have been similar, have said, well, we've got people living in that area or over there, or here's an estate nearby where there's nothing. And it usually doesn't take a lot of imagination to find somewhere not too far away where you think, wouldn't it be great to have a local church for that area? Even though the people could theoretically get to the mothership, it feels distinct enough. The church will be angled slightly differently in style. And so there's that pull factor in terms of saying, let's have a church in that new area.
We'll perhaps come back to some of those because they're quite interesting to explore how places might be different. Just tell us a bit more of the story, Steve. You weren't there right from the outset as all these discussions were going on, were you? So just tell us a little bit about what the processes were. Was it just a question of, you know, there are those 30 people, off you go? Or was what were the processes that the church went through?
So I was kind of there. So at the time I worked for UCCF in Nottingham.
Okay, you were part of the church.
I was part of the church family.
Okay.
And had been, without boring people, previously. It's the church I sort of grew up in, became a Christian in. And
So known territory for you.
So I kind of knew about the plans.
Yeah.
And Katie and I moved up. I moved up from Cambridge to Nottingham for work reasons. And we're part of Beeston Free and interested in being part of the church plant.
Okay. Did you live in Ryland at that point?
Almost.
Okay.
Technically not.
Okay.
Yeah.
Within in a railway carriage somewhere. Yeah.
If a true Rylander would have said no.
But someone from Beeston would have said yes, you're right.
We were interested in, as a family, we just got married, probably a year into marriage, and keen to be part of that.
Let's get something more exciting than a new marriage. Yeah.
The assistant minister at Beeston at the time was sort of driving it, done all the sort of community surveys, gathered a team of people. It was exciting. We were talking about what to expect, what the problems might be, that kind of thing. And at the time I was thinking of like what might be next for me, having finished, coming to the end of my sort of time with UCCF. So I was thinking that through. And then the assistant minister at the time was also sort of wondering about sort of going overseas. And so in God's providence, a door opened for him and his family to go to Indonesia. And so Beeston approached me and said, look, what do you think about being part of this? The initial plan was to plant a church. That was sort of Michael's sort of vision. That was where things were going. Yeah. Me being a bit younger and sort of less experienced, hadn't done Bible college, which Michael had, that kind of thing. I was sort of fresher to that kind of ministry. And so, but the church were keen to go ahead because so much progress had been made. And so we made the call to not to plant an independent church straight away, but to be a congregation of Beeston Free was how we sort of framed it. I was with a group of other guys, elders, led that congregation. The dream was to do sort of, I think, 3 or 4 days with the church, the congregation, and then a day study, which didn't quite go to plan at the time. That was the start of it, really. Yeah.
Would you still do it the same way, do you think, given
time over? Yeah, it's an interesting question. The reasons, I think I would. I wouldn't advise it. So if someone
you would, but you wouldn't advise it. You're going to have to explain that a little bit more for us.
So I think if I was to sit down with someone who was keen to get into church planting and wants to do ministry, I'd say get some training, get some help. And the way we did it, I'm not sure is the best way. At the time, things like Crosslands didn't really exist. No. There wasn't an online, I think Oak Hill were thinking of doing some online stuff, but hadn't started. So I ended up with RTS Global in the States, which is the online thing. It wasn't ideal, but the circumstances of where we were at as a family, issues with my wife's sort of health, and we had had a new baby, and there's just lots of things where I thought, actually, in those circumstances, again, I think probably
providentially
would.
It seemed to be the right thing to do.
But wouldn't advise it.
Yeah,
and it was hard going.
What size was the core team at that? So you said there were 30 people from Beeston who lived in the area.
Yeah,
was that kind of automatically you're in? I mean, how did that team get selected or self-selected?
I can't really remember the details, but I think there were two or three home groups that met in the Rylands.
Right. Okay.
And so the approach was to those. Do you want to be part of this? Yeah. And some people, the majority said yes. A few said no. It's a perfectly reasonable thing to say. It's about 30 odd adults. And I think we had like three babies at the time. We started. And in fact, the local school we're good relationship with, they let us have their hall, which is where we're still meeting.
Okay, so. You're still in the same place?
Yeah.
Yeah. Primary school, secondary school?
Primary school.
Primary school.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And tell us a little bit more about those first few months then. I mean, it must have felt like an odd thing. There were you, sort of new boy, not new to Christian ministry, but new to this kind of work. Did you have any sense of what you were doing? Or you know, that's not a pejorative question, a genuine question. You know, had that been mapped out? What sorts of things were in your head then?
Yeah, not. I didn't know what I was doing. I'm not sure I do yet, but... I had convictions about ministry that had been formed in me over the previous decade, both from doing a church internship at Beeston Free in the early noughties, and then through working with UCCF, sort of had an idea of what I thought I should be doing. And in that sense, just got on with those things of like teaching the Bible to people, praying, trying to model evangelism and doing outreach and reaching the community. What I wasn't ready for, probably naive about, was the reality of pastoral care. So that was a significant, for us as a church, it's not true, I'm sure, of every church plant, but we had quite early on, we had a really great year building up where we met a lot, talked about what we expected to be difficult, what it would be like to be part of a church plant, what happened if new people came, how would that make us feel. I thought we had some really great discussions. And then we launched, and then I think it was probably the, I might have got the timings wrong, but it felt like the second or third Sunday, we had a very significant pastoral issue hit us, which shook us quite dramatically. It certainly shook me. I just did not have a clue what to
do. Those other things are not nothing, are they? No. You thought about what a church plant would be like and how it would feel. I mean, those kinds of things are important to be thinking about, aren't they, Graham? Or do you just... You've done a couple of these. Do you just take, Mother Church song list and just transport it to the new place? Is it?
Yeah,
I mean, that's a way of doing it.
It is a way of doing it. And with mother-daughter plants, the daughter can simply be the mother church smaller. Yes,
completely share the family
down the
likeness.
Road and just completely fit. Yeah, exactly. And that can be a great thing. And as long as everyone's wants that, that's great.
Usually that can be quite straightforward in that you're not reinventing the wheel.
You're not trying to reinvent the wheel, and everyone knows what to expect because it's the same in a different venue place, and somewhat smaller.
Yeah.
However, you have to ask, is that what's best for this area, or would it be good to modify in any way? And if so, how? And secondly, there'll be a different leadership. And those leaders might have particular emphases, or even not necessarily theological emphases, but just kind of stylistic preferences.
Maybe different
ways
gifting.
Of working.
I mean, you do adapt around the fringes to people's different gifting.
You do.
Take something like music.
Yeah.
For example, you might have different musicians. That might require you to think about music a different way.
Yeah. And the very fact that you're smaller may mean it's just going to look different.
Mm.
So many plants can't replicate everything that the mothership had and has to work out how to do that well for them.
Yeah.
So I think there has to be a healthy respect and honouring of the mother church, but I think daughter plants should feel, it's a bit like moving out of the family home, as a son or a daughter and setting up home by yourself. You respect your parents, but you're allowed to have your own design styles.
To continue the analogy, though, do you still bring your washing home? Yeah. I mean, are the services you can still tap into? Is that one of the benefits of a mother-daughter plant?
Yeah, it's one of the interesting things compared to the other models is that there's quite a variation in what the relationship between the daughter and the mother is. So you've already mentioned, Steve, that you thought, let's not go completely independent straight off. Let's be a congregation of Beeston. Mm. And that's quite a common thing. Maybe there's shared finance, shared eldership, and so on. At the other end of the spectrum, you're independent from day one. And there are probably variations on how quickly you move from one to the other. What I think does happen is the plant often starts to develop its own identity. People join it rather than joining Beeston.
Yeah.
Right.
And so are they going to become members of Rylands or members of Beeston?
That was exactly our experience.
Yeah. And so that sort of experience pushes you to think, oh, actually, we actually need to become our own thing at some stage.
Yeah.
Even when you become your own thing, there can still be maybe shared youth ministry, midweek group, something like that. Some plants continue to have, say, separate morning services, but a joint evening service. And I think just working out what is helpful support while allowing the plant to become its own thing.
So you don't have to fit into a particular model.
No.
How did that work at Rylands? What was that sort of... I've already been talking about different identities. Now I'm going to talk about transitioning. what did that transition look like, Steve, at Rylands?
I mean, we were...
How long before you were independent?
Yeah, so, well, it wasn't until after COVID in the end.
Okay, so slightly unusual circumstances.
COVID interrupted our plans, really. Yeah. We started as a congregation. So the idea was that we do our own thing in the morning, and we said we'd encourage people to go to an evening service at Beeston.
Right, okay.
But we weren't, you must go.
Yeah.
It was.
And presumably, you know, a lot of the morning congregation wouldn't, you know, that's the way church works. They'd go to the evening congregation.
Exactly. Yeah. Anyway. But yeah, it was a shared eldership. So as elders in the beginning, we were a part of Beeston Free Eldership as well.
So did you have so just explain that to me how that works. Did you meet separately as Ryland's elders, but also with the Beeston elders?
Yeah.
So you were making quasi-independent, semi-independent decisions.
Yeah. I mean, I think we might do that differently, because I think what Graham said there became a reality quite quickly, in that we had people that joined us that had no affiliation to Beeston Free.
Okay.
Didn't quite understand.
Wondered who this other group were.
Yeah, why are we going there in the evening? Like, why would we do that? And didn't really understand membership. And that became, we quite quickly, I say quickly, it probably was a lot slower than it should have been, but there was that, not tension, didn't feel like a tension. It was just a reality.
Yeah,
we had to talk about ourselves differently,
sure,
and
sure.
Increasingly became awkward to describe ourselves as a congregation of Beeston Free. Mm.
Did you have I mean, this seems like a minor thing, but I guess it is about identity. Did you have a separate name from the start?
Yeah.
So you were Ryland's Community Church from the start.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So people joining would have just seen it as that.
Yes.
They wouldn't have seen it as brackets, part of the Beeston family.
Yeah. We tried to explain it as a congregation to people that came.
Yeah.
But
it's a weird thing, isn't it?
It is.
It's helpful if you've come from that setting, but otherwise it's a bit odd.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And Graham, just talk about that sort of leadership, that sort of shared leadership can have both advantages in terms of the breadth and the strength. Yeah. But also disadvantages. You can end up being the little, the cheeky brother never really gets talked about and discussed,
or people
who aren't involved making decisions. There's some pros and cons there, aren't there?
Yeah, there really are. And I think in my experience, it can be a great way to start, particularly if it feels fragile because you're part of the bigger thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Effectively, you're just starting another meeting down the road. Nothing else changes, you know? But over time, we've mentioned the membership dynamics. Leadership dynamics, I think, are also really key.
Yeah, yeah.
You end up with elders who aren't part of the plant congregation. Maybe they've never been to the plant congregation, involved in discussions and decisions about that congregation.
Sure.
And to begin with, I think that's okay. There can be some shared wisdom.
Especially
there.
If that meeting's led well.
If that meeting's led well, exactly.
You give more weight to those who are
exactly,
there.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. But over time, that becomes increasingly odd. You need to give those leaders who know that flock the license to kind of make decisions for them. And so I've seen scenarios where there is that kind of separated eldership, and yet there are very good links between the two, maybe meeting with a senior pastor for advice or coaching. So there's still the kind of support, and wisdom available in case of a pastoral crisis and so on,
mm-hmm.
Rather than feeling of being cut adrift.
Yeah.
But of course, even if you were independent from day one, you'd certainly expect there to be good relationships and that kind of ongoing advice anyway.
So it sounds like it's useful to define what some of those relationships look like. Who's responsible for what and at what point?
Exactly. And I think it's really important people are just clear from the start. So Plant I led in Leicester, we decided to go for exactly this model, just start a congregation.
Yeah, yeah.
Because people were quite concerned as to whether it could work, a bit nervous. But we said within a few weeks or months, we're going to separate out our small groups into separate congregations. The elders going to meet with this kind of pattern of together and separate.
Right.
And within this kind of time scale, we're looking at going independent.
Okay.
So everyone knew what
it didn't just happen. It was clear.
We knew what the roadmap was. And even if there was some flexibility in some of the timings, everyone knew where we were going.
And presumably a larger core group, as these sort of church plants will often have, give you the liberty to map out things like that a little bit.
They do. And usually you can, assuming it's going well, isn't struggling, and so on, you can usually move towards independence with a bit more confidence.
Yeah. And are the shared services still with Beeston in any area, or is it completely independent?
No, we started to move towards becoming independent sort of 2019, started to plan sort of constitutions and all that kind of church handbook.
All that back office stuff, yeah.
Yeah,
it's
and
important,
then,
isn't
then
it?
COVID yeah. happened, and we just, it was just knuckle down and got through that.
Sure.
And then since COVID, we've managed to yeah, to detach ourselves administratively. So there's still strong friendship with Beeston. Mm. Like as a staff team in the Rylands, we work out of Beeston Free. They give us a room in the corner.
Oh, okay.
And we're able
okay.
to work there and stuff, okay. which is lovely.
They're giving you any windows in your room, are they?
We've got one window.
Okay.
Yeah, we have one window. But no, I think increasing, there's a few people that from the first lot of core people that might go on a Sunday evening, but I think that's rare.
So
now.
It's a friendship connection, really, yeah. beyond anything yeah. else. And that's the right place to get to, isn't it, Graham? Yeah, that's right. We want to be getting to.
And
that's
lots right. has changed at yeah. Beeston. Like they've had a change in leadership recently. And so that, again, just creates a bit yeah. more distance
yeah.
again.
Yeah. And so their new leaders are saying, you know, Rylands where, you know, don't know the story, do they, in quite the same
yeah.
way?
Yeah. yeah.
Just, you're obviously 12 years in or whatever it is. Tell us, Steve, you know, looking back, what have been the key challenges, do you think, for you? I mean, obviously, challenges are very personal and circumstantial, yeah. but just in broad terms, what have the big hurdles been, do you think, to overcome?
Yeah, I think the biggest one for us, I think, apart from the pastoral stuff and sure. thinking that through. Yeah.
Which is going to be true in any church. That
exactly.
Thing. Those yeah. things are going to be draining and time
yeah.
consuming.
Yeah. I think it was our demographic. So when we started, the sort of 30 core, we were of a similar sort of age and stage in life. Quite a few of us sort of newly married. Like I said, we had three babies, I think, maybe three or four.
Why was that? Was that because it was a self-selecting group or the kind of place that Rylands was?
I think it's the kind of place Rylands okay. was, really. Okay. Yeah.
So what did you lack, all being the same
demographic? Yeah, so I think we lacked older men and women.
I was going to say grey hairs, but yeah. looking at you, I can't hear.
Well, this is the fruit of 12 years work.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. I think we lacked sort of, yeah, folk in there who'd sort of been through parenting all that. So there was that sort of pastoral wisdom and like how to handle that. That was an issue. But on a very practical level, what it meant was that for those who had children, and it felt like everyone, I think there was a time, I think it was for the first 10 years, there was never a time when someone wasn't pregnant. It was family wasn't pregnant. So it just made doing church quite hard work because mm. people are going through all sorts of difficult things, and the pressure of being new parents as it on its own is hard. But other stuff. So that, I think, that was a real struggle. And we got to a point where we were, do we need to stop? Because we're really struggling to keep things going. And we weren't doing loads. So our sort of philosophy of ministry was quite, we didn't want to set up toddler groups and youth groups. The intention was get to know your neighbours, invest in stuff that's happening already in the mm. in the area, be part of sports teams rather than doing our own thing. Yeah. So it wasn't like there was loads of ministry going on. It was just Sunday and home groups that we were sort of running, but they became hard to do. Mm. But being part of being connected to Beeston meant that we were able to go back to Beeston and say, would anyone like to come and help us?
Right.
And that was...
So did you get other people come and join from Beeston after that initial core group went? Others came across, did they?
Yeah, we had the wonderful Connie Pringle and the Willises who turned up. And they were just what we needed for a particular period and got us through. So that was that was a real bonus.
Obviously, they're specific to you. Graham, what are some of the other challenges that these kinds of plants often face?
Well, that's not an uncommon one. Yeah. That's obviously partly due to the area, but quite often people who are happy to move out of a larger church are young marrieds and singles.
Got a bit of energy.
Yeah. Often those, say, with teenagers might feel like, well, my kids are happy here. I don't want to risk that kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And maybe people who are, you know, grown-up kids, empty nesters, retired, maybe this is a thing for the young people.
Yeah, they think they've done this once already.
You know, and so that plant, that mother-daughter plants typically have a younger group and then lots of young families, and frankly, everyone's just tired.
Yeah.
Mm. It's not an uncommon story.
You're saying having children is tiring.
Well,
I have noticed.
Yes. And I think there's nothing wrong with that, you know. Churches then just mature over time, but if you can lean into asking some of those older folk, you know, whether it's at the beginning or a little way into the plant. In fact, my wife and I have moved to a plant, and the pastor said it'd be so good to have you guys.
You're now the old one.
I am now the old one, and we've got lots of young families, and they haven't been through parenting so on, and so it'd be great to have guys like you. And
presumably,
around.
You could be, you know, that couple in a larger church. Have quite a peripheral role in church, but actually be really critical to the life of somewhere like
that. Could be such a blessing in either going on a plant from the start or moving to a plant that has that kind of demographic. When we planted both in Leicester and in Cambridge, the older folk who came were just such a blessing to us.
We're almost out of time, so let me ask you both one question, which I think is quite interesting coming out of this. When you're selecting a core group or building a core group for this kind of plant, is it just kind of who's going to volunteer, or do you approach people? Do you actually say that couple, for example, an older couple, or do you say it'd be really great to have an older couple? Steve, your experience on that?
I think we said who's
willing to go.
Who's willing to go? We were aware that we were all the same. We didn't foresee the problems that would create. Right, okay. So it wasn't. Okay. So we did approach people who said no, they didn't want to for some of the reasons that Graham outlined. I think now, looking back, I think I'd be a lot more, we really need you.
Yeah.
Rather than, I think we're missing this age group, would you consider?
Right.
I'd be a bit more, no, we, this is really a bit of a hole that, because we're part of this, got this relationship, I think you could really bless us and help us.
Agree with that, Graham?
Yeah, I do very much. And I specifically invited various older people to come. Not all of them did for various reasons. It's a whole mixture of things. It will depend obviously on the geography, who lives in that area or who's willing to move to that area.
Do people need to be in an area when you move geographically like that as a church?
It depends a little bit how the church will work.
Yeah. If someone said, I'll give you two years, but we can't move.
Well, I think that's one thing, that is one way to go. As long as everyone's clear if the leadership, if that fits with the philosophy of the leadership and how they're working and isn't going to undermine things, then that can be a good help. Also in some mother-daughter plants, you want to manage who goes so that you don't lose a whole kind of generation or whatever.
Okay. I thought you were going to say, so you don't take anybody you really don't want.
No, I mean, you've got to send your best. You've got to send your best. And there's a great philosophy of planting from a mother church. It's like, if you won't miss them, we don't want them.
Okay.
You want people who are who are going to serve.
Yeah.
And everyone's got to sign up to that. But it may be you want to say, actually, would you consider staying, because we're losing all of the people in their 20s or we're losing all of the youth workers or whatever it is.
Yeah. All the musicians.
Musicians.
I've got something about musicians.
Yeah, I know. So managing, what we both want to see, of course, is a healthy mothership still growing, not kind of wounded, as it were. And we want to see a healthy plant.
But it's costly for both.
It'll be costly for both, and there'll be challenges for both. And it's not that we'll ever get the ideal. So you kind of get what you get and you get on with it. Mm-hmm. But trying to lean into that as much as you can, I think, is a good way
to start. In some ways, we should really have done this podcast with someone from the sending church as well as someone from the,
Well, the church that
got sent, because that would be it. That would be another interesting side to the story.
Yeah.
Listen, guys, we're out of time. We could talk about this forever. Exciting. If you're listening in, you know, maybe there are prompts in church life. There's an area where people are living, or church is full. Maybe there's a push, maybe there's a pull, maybe there's both.
Yeah.
And this is the kind of thing you could be thinking about. And Steve, you've just given us the ambition to say it could be you. It could be you. So thank you very much. If you want to talk to us more about church planting, do drop us a line in the office. Graham would love to hear from you. Thanks for listening in. Thank you, Steve. Thank you, Graham, for your time too.
Thank you.